What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the RND Wrestling Podcast. I'm Ryan Brower.
And I am DJ Gruber. And today, guys, we're going to discuss with you the top five greatest heel turns of all time.
That's right, DJ. We're going to be going through our list of what we personally think are like our favorite heel turns and stuff. And obviously, our lists are probably going to be a little bit different from yours as well. So you guys are going to have to let us know if you're watching us on YouTube. Let us know in the comments below what your favorite heel turns of all time are and why. But as always, DJ, we kind of like to, at the beginning of these shows here, kind of go through like different topics and stuff that are going on that are hot in the world of professional wrestling. I'm actually going to let you take the lead on this one, man. Is there anything specific that you want to talk about this time around?
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I do have some stuff to talk about, actually. Well, one, being from the WWE, as much as we rip on it and give it crap, this time I actually feel a little sympathy for this certain superstar, and I think you'll know where I'm headed with this one. She's in the women's division, having the hottest run of her life right now. She's having probably one of the better runs for a woman's competitor, Liv Morgan, and unfortunately, on Monday Night Raw, this past one, she took a bump from Kairi Sane, and it was her shoulder, and from what I've read, I could be wrong here, but they're saying she should be out for at least 6 months to probably the end of this year. So this really sucks because she was having a feud, gonna have a feud with Nikki Bella at Evolution 2.0, and she was about to fight Io Sky for the women's title. Like, she was gonna be on.
They put her in everything right now, man. They had her in all the essential stories.
And she's still women's tag team champion too. It's just like, oh, wow. That's, you know, right. they had to put a belt on her, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, dude, that's it definitely, I'll say this much. I have sympathy for Liv Morgan, but I don't have sympathy for WWE in this situation. So
yeah, I feel bad for Liv Morgan.
Yeah. Liv is a phenomenal competitor. I remember in like the early days of the Riot Squad with her, Ruby Riott, and Sarah Logan, like of all three of those people, Liv Morgan was always my standout. And I think she's continued to prove me right and prove a lot of people right. She is every bit as good as she says that she is. She carries herself like a star. She's got the presence. She's got the look, like all of it.
Like, honestly, like you said, for the Riot Squad, she stood out the most to me. And like the fact that she was able to build on her individual like story and her gimmick, I'm just really impressed. And it's just sad to see a star like her caliber go down.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So best wishes to Liv Morgan. Hopefully speedy recovery in her future. What's really hot in the news right now that just happened literally last night at the time of this recording, but John Cena's variation of the CM Punk pipe bomb from 2011. I know you wanted to talk about this as well.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about this before this show. And let me just say, man, I just love Cena's run right now. I don't care if he's going to rip on, you know, this or that. I just love seeing Cena having the time of his life right now.
I don't know if I necessarily have enjoyed the Cena run so far because I felt like there were a lot of other elements that were supposed to be a part of this, The Rock, which no longer are. And so now we're just kind of at a point now where Cena is trying to, feels like he's trying to be a heel, but like nobody wants to boo him. And I feel like after the pipe bomb promo that he did, you know, the pipe bomb, I say, I don't know how many more people are going to boo him and stuff. I think when he mentioned like Claudio Castagnoli, he mentioned Nick Nemeth, Matt Cardona, I was sitting there like, okay, this is cool. I said, I feel like if you were really going for like a pipe bomb, though, of like things you're not supposed to say, like imagine if he would have looked in the camera and went like, hey, Jack Perry, how you doing? Hey, oh, Matt Nicholas gosh. Jackson, how you guys doing over there? You guys doing all right? Like if he would have done something like that, that is like pipe bomb level stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like no one can match Punk's pipe bomb. But for John Cena to like mention Claudio Castagnoli, Nick Nemeth, and Matt
Cardona. Is still a big deal. Yes. No, and I'm not trying to take away from that. Yes, mentioning somebody from AEW is a big deal.
Oh, yeah, for sure. One of them made it great, though. I will say if he's like, you know what? I will take this title to AEW and defend it over there.
Oh, that would have been crazy. Yeah. If he would have been like, well, because his whole gimmick, though, is that he's going to ruin wrestling. So I don't know if that, I mean, I don't know if that would like add to the story or whatnot, but like, yeah, you're right. If you would have said like, maybe in the meanwhile, like for the rest of my contract, I'll go defend this title in other places like New Japan Pro Wrestling. Maybe I'll break through the forbidden door and go defend the title in AEW like that. Yeah, that would have gotten a major reaction.
Oh, that would have. And, like, social media would have been nuts today. And, like, oh, my gosh, he did it. He did it.
Yeah, John Cena to AEW confirmed, you know, like, that kind of stuff, that kind of speculation.
I would have liked it, but, you know, I'll take what I can get. It was a good pipe bomb for Cena.
Yeah, for sure. Did you see that the Beast Mortos has been in the news all over the place this week?
I wanted to talk to you about this.
Yeah, okay.
So, is it official? Is him and Mercedes a thing now?
Okay, let me lead you up to the moment where, like, stuff started happening, right? So last week, like, earlier last week, it was announced that Beast Mortos got his, I believe, like, his lawyer degree, right? That he was, like, he's now, like, a full-fledged lawyer, everything like that. And then, like, several days later, I think it was I don't know if it was, like, him that posted something or Mercedes posted something. It was Mercedes, yes, that posted a picture of the two of them together. And that was the part that was like, oh my gosh, they're dating. And I guess, like, she had broken this, like, the news or whatever to TMZ, and TMZ ran with it. So yes, they are, like, officially dating. Well, and then the other big thing that happened that week as well was the fact that he got to fight at the Arena Mexico show when he originally wasn't even on the card. And by the way, for those who didn't check out AEW in Mexico, the Grand Slam Mexico show, just what a fun wrestling show that was. I believe it was, like, in collaboration with CMLL, and it was just a fantastic event in Mexico. The crowd was great all night long through every match, except for, I think, the Mercedes match. Mm-hmm. But, like, other than that, they were going apeshit for everything. It was amazing.
Those luchadors, man, they can wrestle.
Oh boy, can't they? And also, they really hate Atlas Jr. and Atlas Sr. as well. That was the other thing that I got out of that as well. So what happened was, DJ, so this is according to Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful Select. And I'm a big follower of Sean and Fightful. Like, he's really, like, one of the, like, few people in, like, the news outlet of, like, wrestling news stuff that I really go to. He's my number one. Mm-hmm. And so he said here, Tony Khan personally went to Salvador Lurith Lamoni and requested that the Beast Mortos be allowed to wrestle in his first match in Arena Mexico in 14 years. This is a result of absence of Cash Wheeler and Claudio Castagnoli on the card. So for those who don't necessarily know the story, at the time, Beast Mortos, I think, had, like, a, I don't even want to say it was necessarily a bad ending with CMLL. It was just like, he went from there to go wrestle for AAA. And for anybody that knows anything about, like, wrestling, I guess, wrestling politics in Mexico, like, CMLL, AAA are, like, the two, I would say, biggest brands in Mexico, and they do not like each other at all. And they don't like them working with one another. There was a lot of awkward stuff in the early days of AEW doing Forbidden Door, where, like, people that were wrestling on AAA shows couldn't wrestle at Forbidden Door because New Japan had a business relationship with CMLL, and then CMLL didn't like AAA. So it was one of those, like, New Japan wouldn't do business with AAA, and it forced people like the Lucha Brothers, for example, to not fight on Forbidden Door because of their relationship and their ties with AAA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
So, yeah, Beast Mortos, it was cool that it seemed like they were cool with him wrestling there again. Like, that's very awesome to see. So the other thing I wanted to show you was my text chain with my brother and with Miles. And because we were talking about this, right, I just put out, because for those who don't know, he was in a main event with the Death Rider. So that's why it was, like, really random. So I was like, I would just like to reiterate that the Beast Mortos was randomly added to the main event this evening. I wonder why that might be, with a little, like, you know, curious emoji. And then Miles texted me and he goes, Claudio had some legal troubles, ... with a CEO.
Okay.
We were joking around, yeah, of course, but it was just very funny to me. I'm like, oh yeah, Beast Mortos in the main event, huh? I wonder why that would have been.
You gotta
like
wonder.
Just right after the news just broke that her and Mercedes were a thing, and like Mercedes is one of the top stars in the company. So it was very funny, but yeah. Good stuff.
I love that guy. He's funny.
Freaking Hologram still undefeated, DJ, in AEW. Dude, the man is just, he will not lose. He just won a four-way on that Mexico show.
Really?
Yeah. I think he's like 20-something and 0 now. Like, I wonder where they go with that.
Like, well, do we know who Hologram is still or no?
No, it's still unknown. It's just, to me, the way I always describe him to people is he's Tony Khan's creator wrestler. That's what Hologram is.
Oh, yeah. It's that video game creator wrestler kind of guy.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I don't know if he's meant to have an identity. You know what I'm saying? Like outside of the mask. It's like, it's just like he is Hologram.
Just imagine someone tears off that mask, though. What will happen?
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, maybe it's MJF, judging by, you know, the fact that he's been going around pulling off people's masks and stuff. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Hey, just imagine if MJF is Hologram.
Oh my gosh, if MJF... I don't know. I don't think Hologram's built like MJF is.
I'm joking. I got another news thing that I wanted to talk about before we moved on.
Sure.
So, Elena Black, a.k.a. Cora Jade, she's been a free agent now after getting released from WWE. And she recently went on some interviews and was saying like how she's open to going to AEW, but she hasn't made any decisions yet. Personally, in my opinion, she should come to AEW because we kind of need the people in that division per se. But at the same time, I wouldn't mind if she's in like NWA or something or New Japan.
I think Cora Jade, unfortunately, is someone that was just a victim of circumstance. I think that the fact that she had like multiple injuries, I think WWE looked at that and thought that she was injury prone, even though that Cora Jade is a fantastic wrestler. And I think she's going to only continue to get better as time goes on. And I think she's still in like her early 20s as well. So she's got, I think the sky is the limit for her. As far as her being in AEW, I think that is definitely a possibility. I think definitely within the future, we could definitely see that happening. But I think what's going to happen first is Cora is going to go around and try to establish a name for herself outside of AEW. So there's more, if she does end up going to AEW, she can maybe get like a better offer for them, or there'll be more hype coming into her like debut there. Like more people will be excited to see her, things of that nature. So yeah, I think it's definitely a possibility that we'll see her in AEW, but maybe not by this year. Maybe not. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm assuming she'll probably come like next year after she like built her brand per se.
Yeah, that seems a little bit more realistic, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it'd be very nice to have her in the women's division. She would complement it very well.
Yeah, I was so surprised. Like of all the people that they were releasing like a couple months ago or whatever, when I saw Cora Jade's name on there, I was like, whoa, really? Like that's who y'all got rid of? Y'all were like hyping her up as like one of your girls or whatever for the future. And then they just kind of casted her aside. Like if it was me, right, like I would have brought Cora Jade in the second that she became available. But it sounds like, you know, Cora's got her priorities right now and AEW will have theirs. And I think when the stars align, the two will come together.
Mm-hmm. What makes this even more sad for her is that Punk was like her mentor.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I remember like Punk was even like, you know, posting some stuff about it too. Like, hey, just, you know, keep your head up. You got a bright future. Like you'll be back eventually and all that. So do you want to get into our topic of discussion for today, DJ?
I sure do, my good man. Do you want to start us off or should I?
I can start us off if that's fine.
Yeah, we'll switch it up. You can go today.
Okay, cool. So just to reiterate for everybody, we are going to go through our top five, I guess, personal favorite heel turns of all time. These are not definitive historic context of like, oh, this is how it must be. It's like everyone's heel turn list is going to be different, right? So just kind of keep that in mind as you're, you know, as we're going through our lists here. So I'm going to start out with my number five. And this one, obviously, when this one happened, I wasn't around when it happened, but like, it's so iconic. And it's like just been ingrained in my head as a wrestling fan at this point that it's just like, it's hard for me to not put him on this list. And that's Shawn Michaels. And we're going back to like 1992. the infamous barbershop scene with him and Marty Jannetty and him throwing through the barbershop window and just like that being the moment that like kickstarts Shawn Michaels, you know, career as like a singles competitor, because he was always like a tag guy before that. But like this was really his breakout moment. And then unfortunately, Marty Jannetty didn't really go too far after that. But like, you know, Shawn Michaels, though, it worked for him.
I respect that, man. Totally a good moment to get Shawn Michaels going. And if you think of it, that kind of did jumpstart Shawn Michaels more, like almost like Swerve Strickland today.
Yeah, I guess like with the stuff with him and Keith Lee. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Mm-hmm. Not as big as, you know, Shawn Michaels, but if you think of it, it's kind of like the resemblance to today.
Well, and I think like the Swerve Strickland like turn on Keith Lee and stuff, like I don't think it was like that big of a turn, but at the same time, like I think it did kind of work the same, right? Like look at where Swerve is now. He's like one of the top stars, not just in AEW, but like in wrestling, I would argue. Oh, so yeah, it did. That turn did wonders for him.
Funny enough, man, that was my number five. That's, and it wasn't a big, like people think of greatest of all time, but if you think of long term here, look at what happened to Swerve. He's now like the highest paid pro wrestler and the singles competitor. He's one of the main event stars. He's viewed as one of the top guys. And at first when you see him, it's like, okay, why is this guy on the show? Or, you know, why is he one of the main guys? But when you see that man wrestle, wow, it is like beyond compare. Because yes, that wasn't like a great heel turn that Swerve and Keith Lee had, but at the same time, it boosted one up, but also kind of like laid low on the other, per se.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting thing to consider as well. Definitely that I've taken into account for my list as well, is like sometimes it's not even just about the heel turn. Sometimes it's about the follow-up too and what you do with it. And I think in the case of Swerve Strickland, look, I said, you know, back at the time when they were both in AEW as a tag team, Swerve and Keith Lee, I'm like, dude, both of these guys could be world champions right now, like if AEW really wanted to book them as such. And I definitely feel vindicated in the fact that it's gone that way for Swerve. Keith Lee, I think it just unfortunately with like the injuries and stuff that he's had and the health problems, like that's not necessarily on him much as it is just like a bad set of circumstances. But yeah, man, I mean, Swerve, that's actually not a bad shout for the list, man. And Swerve Strickland, once again, like he is one of the top guys in wrestling, and he proves that every single week. Like he comes out there and he just has that star presence to him.
Yeah, he does. And it's just like, oh, yep, I gotta watch this guy. It's not like, oh, I could, you know, get some food or whatever. It's like, oh, I have to see this guy wrestle because he is the future of AEW.
And it helps that he's a good wrestler too. So that also, you know, kind of helps with things.
Well, it also helps that he has his manager with him, Prince Nana.
Oh, Prince Nana. Yeah, shout out to Nana for sure. All right, so going into my number four. So this is another, okay, so this one is more, I would say more recent times within, even though I say that, oh my gosh, wait a second, how long ago was 2017? Was that 8 years ago now? Oh, geez.
Yes,
okay, so a little more recent than 92, but still definitely a couple years yet. So I'm going back to 2017, to the days of NXT, and I am going with Tommaso Ciampa turning on Johnny Gargano. Oh my gosh, that storyline between Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa is probably the best thing to ever come out of NXT, and those matches and all of it, just absolutely fantastic. And the crazy part was, you'll hear a lot of people talk about today, like people joking when they're watching a wrestling show, oh, the copyright logo means nothing. Just because the copyright logo's up to end the show, it doesn't mean anything anymore. It all sparks from this show because it came after a takeover event where Gargano and Ciampa were in the main event teaming up DIY versus AOP, Akam and Razor, the Authors of Pain. And it was for the tag team championships. AOP won. And then, you know, they're Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, they're walking up the ramp and stuff. The, you know, crowd's giving them the standing ovation. Ciampa's got his arm over Gargano. The copyright logo goes up that it looks like all the show's going to end. And all of a sudden, Ciampa just throws Gargano into the LED boards and stuff. It's like, oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh, man. I remember hearing about that. And I'm like thinking, why? But then again, if you remember of like a pro wrestling turn, it's like, you like these two guys that are close together and have great chemistry. The moment you let them turn, it's just going to skyrocket pro wrestling. And honestly, that's what skyrocketed both of those careers.
I honestly can't believe, like, it is astounding how well Triple H booked them in NXT. And then fast forward how many years later, the lack thereof of them being on the main roster and how terribly that has gone down.
Honestly, I mean, I get that he's the head of creative now and he's got so much to do, but like, you would think he would do more for the NXT guys that he helped groomed to the main roster before, you know, they got, you know, nothing.
Yep. I completely agree. Dude, do you remember that? And this wasn't Triple H. This was a Vince thing I remember from like 2019. There was an episode of Monday Night Raw where they just announced, like, it was just this random show in the middle of, oh gosh, was it like the summer? It wasn't like the night after WrestleMania or the night after SummerSlam. It was just like a random episode of Raw where at the beginning of the show, they're like, hey, we're calling up like four of the top guys in NXT right now. And everyone was like, wait, what? And two of them were Gargano and Ciampa, and they were teaming together for a match on Raw when they were feuding in NXT.
Oh my.
And everyone was like, what?
Yep. I remember that. I remember hearing about it. I'm like, so they're feuding, but yet they're teaming together. What's going on?
There was no logic. Like, Vince woke up one day and probably just like ate a bad breakfast or something like that in the morning, was like, well, you know what we're going to do today is we're going to call up people from NXT. And like, well, okay, sure, Vince, whatever.
If you think of it, it was kind of like, you know, a curveball coming week after week with that creative. It's like, okay, we're going to do it this week. There was no consistency. And as a fan, that sucks to watch, honestly.
Yeah. And again, Triple H didn't do any better when he took over creative. Like, yeah, he gave them the tag team titles or whatever, but like, it really, they didn't do much with it. And like, now, like, I try to find DIY stuff on SmackDown. I can never find much. Same with Motor City Machine Guns, which just breaks my heart at this point.
What did we not talk about?
I know, DJ. I was thinking about that. We said that this was going to happen.
I have a feeling that it's going to happen to the Lucha Bros and their singles competitive, because what has Penta done? Nothing. Yep. What has Rey done? Nothing. What has MCMG done? Nothing. And I fear for it, and it sucks, man.
Yeah. Dude, they had such a good story coming in. I know we're going like off topic now, but yeah, they had such a good story coming into SmackDown, and then they just completely, once again, just dropped the ball with it.
It's hard to watch good wrestlers not be used. Like, I get it, you know, it must be hard for a creative and all that, but it pains me to watch these guys that did good in, you know, the indies, New Japan, you know, come to this other company and not do anything. It's just very painful for me to watch.
I know. That's why I can't watch WWE much anymore, man. It's hard. Like, every time I go through this, it's like, bro, I can't keep doing this. Like, this, and this is why there needs to be more than one major wrestling company to exist, because like, all your favorites ain't going to thrive in one company. So when then that happens, they got to be able to go to another. So yeah, I think let's bring it back around here.
Yeah, let's bring it back.
Yeah. So for your number five, you had Swerve Strickland. For my number five, I had Shawn Michaels, and number four, Tommaso Ciampa. What is your number four?
All right. So my number four, I have mixed feelings about this guy, but if you think of it, looking back, this man, it kind of saved this man's career. The Tribal Chief, Roman Reigns. And the reason I say it is, like, yes, he was referred to as the big dog, you know, coming up in WWE, but what did he do? Yes, he won a title or two, but what was his thing? He was the big dog. What else?
And the crowd hated him. Mm-hmm. They despised him.
I hated him.
Yeah.
But then when he became the Tribal Chief, I'm like, okay, I could maybe get behind this, because this is a new gimmick for him, you know? It's going back to like his family origins per se, and like, look at the family he did bring up with him, like the Usos, Solo Sikoa for a bit, and even The Rock for like a show or two, but still it was centered around that family, and it was very cool to see that per se, like him being this tribal chief, you know, being with Paul Heyman. Honestly, one of Paul Heyman's better side manager gigs was being with Roman Reigns, aka Brock Lesnar. But anyways, it was such an awesome thing for him. He was just, you know, coming out, and he was just, like, doing his, like, little signals. And it was like, yeah, I could get behind this guy. And this was like one of the best scenes he could do because it saved his career, but also projected him to like go up more than what he could do with the big dog per se.
Because Roman Reigns, I think, had like a 4-year title run. For the first like two and a half years of his title reign, there was nobody in that company that was even close to being on his level. Like, no one, nothing.
Like that's what's so great about that term, because no one could get up to that trajectory of the tribal chief.
Yeah, man. And I think that move ended up saving Roman's career from just like just fading into obscurity as this baby face that no one cared about. And you just look at him now and it's like everybody loves him. And it's not just like people don't want to boo Roman Reigns anymore. They want to cheer him. And even though one could argue that Roman Reigns is still a heel to this day, because he never apologized to Jey Uso. He never said he was sorry. He never like, you know, apologized for all the bad things that he did. He's still a heel, I feel like. But yeah. The only difference now is people are cheering him versus, you know, booing. But mm-hmm. you look at then what the Bloodline story did, like once they started getting like Sami Zayn involved and you had him in the picture doing the stuff with the Bloodline, and then the return of Cody Rhodes to WWE, and all of the sudden, and then you start having the rise of like Jey Uso as well. And it's like all of a sudden, people are starting to feel important in WWE again versus just Roman. And that's why I still argue to people to this day. Like I will still argue, as good as WrestleMania 40 was, I do believe that WrestleMania 39, Cody should have won the title. I will say continuously because totally I firmly believe that. I firmly believe that Cody was at a point in his career where he, you know, just, you know, he had been with WWE for a year at that point. He had became the biggest thing. He proved himself to be undeniable. He comes back. He's one of the most over people in WWE that they had seen in years. Like people, so many people, again, it was like nobody felt as important to Roman Reigns in WWE. All of a sudden Cody Rhodes comes back and I'm like, oh, hold on. I got to keep an eye on this. I got to see how well they treat Cody Rhodes. And they did. And he felt like a big star. And I was like, okay, well, Cody and Roman, WrestleMania 39, surely. And they did. And I'm like, all right, Cody's going to win the title. Surely that's where they have to go with this. And then they didn't. And I was like, this stupid company. Bringing it back around to Roman Reigns, man. The heel turn itself, not that great. Like, I think it was just him in a locker room with Paul Heyman. And that's how it started.
Yeah.
But where it led to, you can't deny that it was an impactful heel turn.
It's the way how I viewed this, it was like the small things that helped him like move up in the, you know, the company per se. That's why I put it on my five list, top five.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So moving on then to my number three. This one's interesting because I have basically two heel turns down for this one, but it is both done by the same person, and that's Seth Rollins.
Oh, yes. I have them later on, too, but
yeah,
man, what has that man not had? What has he not done? Because he's been, like, a major part of this company since he's been called up, too, with Roman and all of them.
Yeah, for sure, dude. The Shield was such an important part to the WWE. And then when it comes to the first heel turn, right, like the Shield chair shot to the back or whatever, Triple H going out there and being like, you know what I do better than anyone else is adapt. Plan A didn't work. Tonight is plan B. There's always a plan B. And then, you know, Seth takes the chair, bam, right to the Bowman, Roman Reigns is back as he hears someone in the crowd shouting, no!
Yep.
So funny.
And that was
that
my
live forever.
Funny enough, that was my number three too. So we could like just talk about this one, honestly. Okay.
Sure.
Well, let me just say, I wasn't into WWE at the time, but when you and your brother got me caught up to like all this history and all that, the moment I first saw it, I'm like, No, you ruined a good faction.
Yeah, I got so mad, dude. I was so mad. I thought the Shield should have been together for at least another year.
I would have thought so too, but if you think of it, look what happened to Seth Rollins. He became this bona fide superstar. Like, he wins Money in the Bank. He helps the Authority win. And then he became champion under their wing of his first heel turn. And look what happened to him. He became like this superstar that no one thought would be a superstar, honestly.
And Seth Rollins, again, was like one of those guys, like just early on, all three members of the Shield, they did something that I feel like not many people have been able to do, and that's come into the company young and make an impact, right? Like, so many of the, like, young talent that come into the WWE, we're like, all right, they're going to do this. And then WWE are like, they got to pay their dues, or this ain't going to work. We got to wait like 10 years time before they give them something. But
Or get cut.
Yeah, right. Like, a la Cora Jade. But at the end of the day, like, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, they were all given the ball early, and they completely ran with it. And again, I think that the Shield should have stayed babyfaces longer, because their face turn, I think, started with the Wyatt feud that happened earlier in that year. I think it was in like January or February that babyface turn started. And then you had them going into a match at WrestleMania with like Kane and the, you know, Road Dogg, Billy Gunn, like the Outlaws, and that, like, sort of this feud against the Authority going into the next couple of months. And then immediately following that was the Seth heel turn. And I remember sitting there like, man, like, I wish they would have been baby faces longer. I would have liked to seen them all like be champions as good guys and whatnot, but unfortunately, the creative at that time just didn't think that was meant to be. So, as unfortunate mm-hmm. it was, the turn itself, though, is absolutely fantastic. And then, DJ, we fast forward to WrestleMania 41.
Mm-hmm.
And the turn that Seth Rollins had there, where it felt like he was like the one true babyface in that match, the triple threat with Punk and Roman. And the setup for it was kind of corny, with Paul Heyman just being like, my tribal chief, the Shield, look, you can do the Shield chair shot thing again. Like, okay, really, Paul? Like, come on now. But like, the moment when Heyman low blows Roman and Seth just stands up like he knew what was coming. And then Heyman walks over to him and hands him the chair. And I'm just like, oh, we're in for a ride with whatever this is going to be for the next year or so. Like, oh man, we're about to start cooking. And then we're still in the middle of it right now. Like, still in the middle of this story.
He's got a good faction right now. Bron Breakker, Bronson Reed. If they could get like two more people in that group, brother, I am telling you, this is going to be one of the better factions in today's WWE.
I think that what needs to come out of this, because I think it's only a matter of time before Seth Rollins becomes the champion. Like, he just won Money in the Bank, I'm pretty sure. So he's going to become champion again. I think this has to end with Bron Breakker beating Seth for the title is the way that I would do it if I was booking it.
Because you could build a Bron Breakker under his wing and let him turn on Seth and then give him the, you know, keys to taking over the company.
For sure. And I'm right there with you, dude. I would love it if they added more members to this group.
Honestly, like, they're doing good right now, but they're missing like that member, you know, that like glue to the group almost, or, you know, that like guy that's, you know, their comedian per se.
I feel like, they've got their muscle, right? Like, both Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed, as I joked around the other day with my brother, I called them the Bronze, Team Braun, the Bronze.
And they could win the tag champ still.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. So it's like, you've got your muscle there, right? And you've obviously got your leader, your architect in Seth Rollins. But I feel like you're just kind of missing like that little wild card in there. Like, just the...
You're missing your honorary ooze, per se.
Yeah, 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 for sure. Like, bro, who would you even put in that spot, though? Like,
I don't know. Wait, they were talking to LA Knight last night on SmackDown.
LA Knight would be a interesting variable, I guess. What if they... See, I'm trying to think of, like... What if it was somebody like Ricky Starks? Could you see that?
Honestly, at this point, I wouldn't mind it, because it would give Ricky Saints a push. Wait, I haven't... Honestly, kept in touch with NXT. Is he still champion right now?
I have no idea. I don't watch anything from NXT, really, dude. I don't know.
Honestly, but yeah, honestly, I wouldn't mind Ricky Saints in there, because it gives him more camera time.
I saw people, I remember seeing people joking online that they should name this group the Seth Riders.
Yeah, they should.
It's like a knockoff of the Death Riders. Yeah. So
wait, who's your Marina Shafir then?
That's what I was actually just about to ask you, bro. Like, who would they put in there as like before you say Becky Lynch, like, let's think outside of that. Cause I don't know if Becky Lynch would be a good addition for this group. Like, I feel like it needs to be somebody else.
We got our power couple. What are you talking about?
I mean, it would be the power couple thing. Yeah, you could do that, but like,
and then she could beat up Bailey.
That's not what John Moxley. Yeah, but that's not what John Moxley and Marina Shafir are, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, Marina Shafir is John Moxley's understudy. So, like, who could you put in there that would be like Seth? Like, I feel like I would have said Roxanne Perez, but now she's doing stuff with the Judgment Day. Yeah.
I don't know, man. That's a hard decision.
So let's go into our number two. This list. My number two is one that just happened more recently, and we kind of were talking a little bit about him before, and that's John Cena.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's hard to leave that out as like one of the biggest. If we're talking about like just a moment in time, the moment of John Cena turning heel at Elimination Chamber and like Michael Cole's reaction to it on commentary and the crowd's reaction and everything was like the most perfect moment. I would argue the follow-up hasn't been great, but just in a moment of a heel turn, what a moment. I know they say that in WWE a lot. What a
I knew that was coming when Dwayne Johnson did this.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Rock definitely did the whole thing to kind of foreshadow that.
You knew that was coming when Cena was hugging Cody, and then he did the...
Yeah.
And then they beat him up.
And it's just like, even as they're foreshadowing it, it's like, but they're not... This is John Cena, the biggest good guy for over two decades, turning evil. You're almost kind of like in denial of it in the moment. Like, no, this can't be. You can't do this. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why, John? Tell me why. Tell me why.
Yeah, and you know, Cena's like enjoying it. You know, he's beating up Cody, and then he's like got this whole gimmick now, talking like how, I'm going to ruin wrestling. And you know, I've been in this company too long. I'm just going to speak my mind. And like last night on his sick promo.
Right, with the pipe bomb thing, yeah.
I mean, he's like, hey, you're not going to cut me off here. No one's going to cut me off here, Punk. I'm your only friend here, Punk. And I liked it. I love that.
Yeah, we're still on the air. Oh, I'm breaking the fourth wall. Dude, literally the first couple of lines from his promo last night were word for word what CM Punk said in that initial pipe bomb in 2011. I will say the one thing about that pipe bomb thing though that was killing me was the Slim Jim logo on that table. It was so weird. I hated it.
Well, you know, now that they're putting sponsorship in the ring, it's just like, what happened? Like, what happened to the sacred ring then, you know, Vince?
Yeah, listen, I totally get it for like, because I'm not necessarily a huge fan of it either. Like, I understand its sponsorship and things like that. But yeah, I kind of agree. It's like, I feel like the ring should be like this sacred thing. Yeah. And it's like, now they're just throwing logos all over it to make money. And you've got all the Slim Jim tables now that you have to break to make sure that like Slim Jim is making their quotas.
And don't forget about Prime right next to the commentary booth.
The Prime Hydration Station, that's right. There's that one, too.
Yeah. I just feel like the ring should be sacred, like it has been, you know, for generations. It just feels like they're just throwing away this and that. It's just, they're giving away the value, per se, of pro wrestling.
What WWE is trying to do right now is like maximize their profits, and because they know that they're not going to be hot forever. And I think they know that even now more than ever, because like, I think 2024 for them was like the ultimate thing where you had like that, like from like 2022 to 2024, you know, in the perception of a lot of WWE fans, even though I could still see the writing on the wall then, like, you had all these people hyped and going into WrestleMania 40 with like The Rock changing stuff up. And there was all this crazy stuff going behind the scenes, but they still go with Cody and Roman because the fans want Cody, and they build all this drama into it. Like, oh, they're not going to give it to Cody and whatnot. And there was all this excitement and intrigue around that. Everybody was hyped for it, especially when like The Rock would show up in the final boss character, which I think is the second best version of Rock we've ever gotten besides corporate Rock from the Attitude era. So there was a lot of excitement and a lot of intrigue around that. And then, you know, for Rock to all of a sudden not be a part of those plans anymore. And then you've got, you know, whatever's going on with Cena now, it's, you know, it's clicking, it's not clicking or whatever for people. And it just, WWE doesn't seem like it's on this highward trend anymore. It feels like they're going on a downward trend. And again, I never really saw them up here anyway, but I can definitely see, okay, so people are now starting to realize what I've realized for years now, and that like this stuff isn't actually as good as people think it is. But that's neither here nor there. The John Cena heel turn, obviously, I think in the moment, just hands down has to be, besides one, in my opinion, besides one, the biggest heel turn of all time.
Wow. Funny enough, that is my number one. But before I get to that, my number two, listen here, brother. We're going back in time. We are going back in time to the amazing Hulk Hogan.
Oh, yeah. The immortal Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, brother. All right. So
I don't even know if you meant to do that. I don't even know if you had to. Hell yeah, brother. Like, you know.
No, I didn't mean to.
Okay, that's funny. Good.
So I was watching the, you know, the Vince McMahon documentary about, like, you know, how they grew in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of days ago. And I didn't realize it was big at the time. But when I saw what Hulk Hogan did when he turned and formed the NWO with Scott and Kevin, poof, let me just say that kind of boosted pro wrestling back in the day and what got them into the Attitude Era, because that man, not that he was, you know, the hottest guy in town already, you know, with him and Andre the Giant, but when he did that and formed the NWO, bro, he became like this global star, honestly. Like, he just became this biggest pro wrestler where everyone's just like, oh, it's Hulk Hogan this, Hulk Hogan that, or listen here, brother.
So, you know what's funny? So, and I've mentioned this a couple of times since we've been doing the podcast, but I've been going through and watching through all of the like episodes of WCW Nitro. So I'm right now, I think I'm at like the start, or I'm just getting through like the start of 98. I think I'm like a month or two in now. But yeah, man. So like that Hulk Hogan heel turn, and here's a little spoiler alert since we're talking about it right now. Hulk Hogan is my number one for like the biggest heel turns of all time. Listen, I've become, I feel like, a big like wrestling historian kind of guy in terms of like my fandom for pro wrestling. And like, obviously everybody, listen, you can say what you want about Hulk Hogan as a person. I think he's a piece of shit. I don't like him at all. But at the end of the day, nobody can deny how popular Hulk Hogan was back in the 80s and how that like transcended wrestling and made it like this big thing. And then it's like, you know, Hogan, he has like this sort of falling out thing with Vince and leaving WWF at the time, and then goes to join WCW, I believe in 95, I think, don't quote me, but around that time. And then within a year of that, right in 96 at Bash of the Beach, is when they do the big, you know, heel turn of, you know, Hulk Hogan comes out, presumably to help the baby faces. But Bobby Heenan on commentary kind of gives away when he's like, but whose side is he on? And it makes you go like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Well, surely he's here to help the good guys, because that's how Hulk Hogan's always been. But now that you're telling me this, I don't know if I believe you anymore, Bobby Heenan.
Expect the curveball. Expect the curveball.
Then all of a sudden, right, like Hogan gets in that ring and Dusty's on commentary like, get him, Hogan, get him. And then all of a sudden he turns around, freaking leg drop, and I'm like, what? Like, that's the biggest babyface of all time, just turning heel. Like, that's so, it was such a crazy thing to me when I remember even like when I first got into wrestling, like back in 2011, there were a lot of like older stuff that I would watch. I remember watching that Hogan thing. I was like, wait, but Hogan's like supposed to be like this ultra good guy or whatever.
Yeah, he's supposed to be what John Cena was today.
Yes. Now, the thing that I have realized about Hogan, like, and especially watching through like Nitro as well, Hogan was at a point in his career where he would get booed even as a good guy because people didn't want to see him on top anymore. So like, it depending on the town that they would go to, right? Like, some crowds really love Hogan, other crowds like, you know, oh, boo, screw Hogan, we don't want him here. But then like, I think this heel turn, in the same way that it did something for Roman Reigns, did something for Hulk Hogan in making him this ultra bad guy, for now all of these baby faces have to like rise up and step up to try and stop. And it really, and it was the reason why WCW started kicking, you know, WWF's butt in the Monday Night Wars during the Attitude Era, is because you had like the Hogan heel turn, the rise of NWO, and that faction is what caused them to start, you know, and on top of that too, you look at WCW Nitro, they just had a heck of a roster, and like that cruiserweight division, I love the WCW cruiserweight division from that time. Talking people like Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, Ultimo Dragon, Juventud Guerrera, Psicosis, like the best cruiserweight division of all time, man. It's so good.
Wow. It's amazing to think how much of a roster they had that was very good.
Yeah, dude, it was, they have the financial backing of like Ted Turner and everything as well. And that was what helped them get all this money.
Mm-hmm. And like, just to think of like what WCW did with all that roster, it's just like, wow. And I think that NWO started that thing, that just impresses me. And that's why it was my number two, because not only did Hulk Hogan rebrand himself in a way, but he also helped start a new company per se.
So the thing that I didn't know about NWO, because I remember like NWO hearing about it, like, oh, all these like main event guys joined it. But the thing that I've realized actually going through and watching it is it feels like NWO has like two different sorts of like sections to this group. You have the A group, like the main event group of
led by Hogan.
Yes, you had like led by Hogan, you had Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Randy Savage, Kurt Hennig, you know, guys like that, right? Of like a certain nature.
The top tier.
Yes, the top tier guys. But then underneath that, you had like what I've kind of dubbed as the NWO B team. And that's like all of the more like mid-card or undercard sort of guys that were a part of NWO. We're talking people like Conan, like Buff Bagwell, Hugh Morris, Vincent, like the guys that would get, whenever they were doing an NWO segment, and you had guys like Sting, Luger, any of the babyface, the Giant coming in there to like beat up the NWO, those were the guys that they were taking out, because it's like, okay, well, they're not going to beat up all the main event guys all the time, but here's the guys over here, bring in the B team. We'll have them, like Sting would come out every week descending from the rafters and just beat them all up. It's like, all right, well, that, we know how this is going to go.
Yep. But still, that group did a lot of stuff for them back in the day. And
yeah,
they were, you can't deny it. You can't put them out of any picture, because they were part of the Attitude Era and they helped them transition to the Attitude Era.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, that definitely helped WWF transition into the Attitude Era, because it was like WCW for like over a good year or two was just like kicking their butts in the ratings. And then it had to get to a point where like WWF had to change their style, and they started doing like the Austin McMahon storyline, which is what, you know, really got over. And you had like, you know, corporate Rock and everything. You had Rock and Austin doing stuff. Like that was really the stuff that like turned it around for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was
not DX, like not DX, like Triple H likes to claim. DX was not for, they have the winners rewrite history. I know they, so many people are convinced that like DX, and honestly, I would even argue that my brother has kind of fallen under this banner as well, that he is convinced that D-Generation X was like the biggest part of the Attitude Era. I'm like, that's not even remotely close to being true.
We should have a roundtable discussion about this, because I would love to hear both sides of this. Like,
yeah.
Yes, you can say
they were a factor. They were a factor. Don't get me wrong.
But I feel like the NWO was a, you know, the major, you know, transitioning and big part of the Attitude Era. G-Generation X was like, I don't know, what would you say? Like,
I think NWO was bigger than DX.
Yeah.
Is what I would say.
I feel like DX was bigger, you know, when they were in the 2000s, you know, with just Triple H and Shawn, you know, doing their thing.
Oh, yeah, yep. The era of DX that, like, not many people, like, here's the thing. I can look back at that stuff, and I just, like, there's some of it that I do find kind of funny. Like, I think in the time, the wrestling fan that I am today, I would have hated it. But, like, when I go back and look at it, like, there's certain moments that, like, get me to chuckle. And I'm like, all right, you know what? Like, I can look at this and be like, yeah, what times those were, you know, with Triple H and Shawn.
Yeah. But like, you could say that DX was a big factor, but not like the NWO, because they were, you know, the big stars, you know, main events, the A team, you know, not the B team. I just
feel like NWO B team, take them out of the picture. Yeah, like NWO A team is that was the stuff that was doing it. I don't know. The other thing I never realized about the NWO is, so you know the NWO theme, right? The bam,
been talking about this.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing that I didn't realize is you would have like this guy on the like in the loudspeaker or whatever that's part of the song that would just go new world order. Like every time, just every like couple, like maybe 20, 30 seconds, they just go new world order. And then if Hulk Hogan was out there during the entrance, like if it was Hogan coming out, he would say the biggest icon in wrestling. It's just like, find that funny.
He was the biggest icon during that time.
Yeah, man, definitely. I mean, definitely one of them. And yeah, like, listen, I'm not the biggest like Hogan fan or whatever, even like from a from an in-ring perspective, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't even like him that much for that. But it, again, it's like I can sit there. I can have my thoughts about Hogan as a wrestler. I can have my thoughts about him as a person. But I don't think that anybody can deny, including me, how popular this dude was and how important he was in wrestling, you know, and that's why I think it's the biggest, and that's why I think it's the biggest heel turn of all time.
Oh yeah, I agree with that. And funny enough, I don't really feel like I need to talk about my one because we discussed it with Cena and all that. That was my number one.
So Cena's your number one. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think like both guys were, you know, the biggest baby faces of their era.
Yeah.
And then for them to go heel, that just helps them, you know, become a better all-around pro wrestler per se. That's why they were, in my opinion, the top two great five heel turns of all time.
And theoretically, what you do in that situation as well is make sure that you establish your other baby faces to make sure that they get, you know, to that Hogan level in terms of popularity. Because you had, you know, like there, I remember, see, the only thing about the Hogan heel turn is it, I, I'm still kind of going through like that WCW era, but like from what I've kind of gone through so far, he did put over Luger, and Luger won the WCW World Championship. But the problem was, is like Luger's reign was only a week and then Hogan just won the title back. So I feel like that didn't, in the moment, I was like, oh my gosh, like, let's go. Luger's the champ. Let's go and everything. And then Hogan just won it back. And I was like, oh, well, what did that accomplish? And then there was the Starrcade thing at 97 that like put over Sting, but also didn't put over Sting. And it just like, that was a whole situation. So yeah, I think, don't get me wrong. Like there were definitely like Hogan as a heel has had like, you know, his moments, but he hasn't really like, you know, like as a heel, he wouldn't, you know, he'd just be backstage like, that shit don't work for me, brother. You know, like I'm not gonna do that. So
be the punk backstage back in his day.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. Hogan's like the biggest politicker of all time. That's also partially why he's at where he was at. He did a ton of politicking to get there.
Just like you know, Punk complained about Jack Perry and all that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Dude, yeah, no, Hogan. Dude, there was a thing with like Shawn, because Shawn Michaels and Hulk Hogan, people have always said are like the two biggest politickers ever, right? And they had a match, I think it was in like 2002 or something like that, with Shawn Michaels and Hogan. And mind you, this is after like Hulk Hogan left WWF, had his thing with Vince, went to WCW. When he came back and they had this feud with Shawn of like the two biggest politickers, Hulk Hogan still came out of that on top, I think. And I'm like, if that doesn't show you the power that Hulk Hogan has amassed in terms of his politicking skills to be able to get a win like that over Shawn Michaels, who in his own right is a massive or was a massive politicker back in the day. I think just shows you everything you need to know about Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. For sure. I get what you mean. Hulk Hogan's a lot of things, but he cannot deny what he did for pro wrestling back in the day.
No, for sure. For sure. Yeah, no, definitely for Sure. So you said that Cena was your number one, right?
Yeah. And we kind of talked about it.
Yeah.
We basically covered it when you were talking about it.
Yeah, I think in terms of like the biggest heel turns of all time like that, right? Like it's Hogan and it's Cena. It's like the two biggest. Mm-hmm. I know there's going to be a lot of people that say like, oh, what about Stone Cold's heel turn at WrestleMania 17? Because mm-hmm. that's another one that people think of when they think of the biggest heel turns of all time. For me personally, I didn't like it because that's not the Stone mm-hmm. Cold that I know. The Stone Cold that I know, like, would kick Vince McMahon's butt on TV every week. Like the Stone Cold mm-hmm. that I love and think is the greatest wrestler of all time.
And drink a beer.
Would drink a beer. The guy that would drive down on a Zamboni to like jump off of it and like leap into the ring and take out Vince and get arrested for it. Or I'm talking about the Stone Cold that would drive in with a beer truck and spray beer all over the corporation and Vince and everybody.
Or right? Put a bear trap on one of DX's guys, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Or pour cement into yep. Vince McMahon's car. That's the Stone Cold that I know. Not the guy that like sells his soul to the devil to win the WWF championship from The Rock. Like that, I thought that mm-hmm. was always the dumbest thing, in my opinion.
Becomes a kiss up. I enjoyed it, you know, when he ripped on Stephanie McMahon, you know, back in the day, and you sure. know, it's just saying this and that. He was like their cowboy, you know, back in the day.
Well, and then the other thing too is like people always, the thing with wrestling as well is like that moment I feel like almost kind of ended the Attitude Era, in the sense of like after Stone Cold's heel turn, popularity within wrestling went down. And that was also around the time as well. Like I think a couple of weeks prior to that event is when Vince bought WCW, and WCW was like pretty much dead at that point. So because there was no competition. Yeah, there was no competition. And then all of a sudden you have this Austin heel turn, the biggest babyface at the time turns heel, and ultimately it doesn't work because people just lose interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you think of it back then, it's just like, what a good time to be a pro wrestling fan, because you had the Attitude Era, WCW, and not gonna lie, man, that would have been cool to be part of that experience as a pro wrestling fan, because this was before our time even.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you also had ECW in there as well. ECW was kind of like, how could I compare it to today? If AEW is compared to WCW, just in a financial sense, then I would say that ECW is more so like maybe TNA now today, yeah. perhaps, in terms of it being like a loose third brand, I guess. Obviously TNA without all the extreme stuff, of course, that ECW mm-hmm. would do. But in terms of like, you know, where ECW would have ranked at that time, it would have been underneath there. And ECW was always a thing of like, I've loosely watched like a couple of different things back in the day from like that time, but it's not something that I've ever really felt like that interested in, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't feel like my cup of tea.
Yeah, but not really. Not for me either.
Yeah, but so the point is though, is like you had viable options right out there for like if people didn't want to watch WWF, you had other stuff that you could watch. But then I think like around that same time, like he bought ECW, he bought WCW, and Vince created an empire at that point.
Yeah, and that's what began the WWE now.
For sure, dude. That we almost kind of had like a big like wrestling history course here today on the channel.
Yeah, hey, you know, you learn something new every day.
Absolutely. Every day is a school day, as I like to say. So with that, you guys, I believe that is going to wrap up our podcast for today. DJ, you got any closing thoughts?
Just keep, you know, telling your friends to subscribe to the channel, check us out, and, you know, stay safe.
Yeah, everybody stay safe out there. Heck yeah, man. The world can be a crazy place. So yeah, with that, you guys, that will wrap us up for today. Be sure to give us a follow on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, and we will see you guys in the next one.
Peace out.